On a Tuesday in February, it's the 6th of February already. How's your day going so far? Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show. Alex Cook is our producer. We'll be chatting a little later today about HMCS Haida. Why? Because they recently were recognized for some of the work they've done through some petitions. We'll tell you more from Patrick White. We'll talk with the CEO of Discover Halifax about tourism. Bernie Bentall, who's going to be opening up for Jim Cuddy at the Rebecca Cohn this weekend. We'll be chatting with him as well. This is our Power Lunch, the time each week where we set aside a half hour to speak about the news stories of the day with our two guests in studio. And this week, we're very pleased to welcome to our panel, Allison Garber. Allison Garber Communications. How are you, Allie?
I'm great. How you doing?
Very well. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
No. I didn't even want to watch the halftime show this year.
Really?
I'm not a JT fan, no.
You know what? I don't know which would be worse. A boring Super Bowl and an exciting halftime show, or the reverse?
Exciting. I would go for the exciting halftime show.
Okay. Marco Navarro-Gini from Ames is joining us for the first time on our Power Lunch panel. How are you, sir?
I am well, thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did not.
You did not. So, good. We are all in agreement that sports is not a number one priority today, which is perfect. So, my joke would have fallen flat if I had said we were gathering to talk about sports for the next half hour. You look at a shock on your face. There's been so much in the news. This half hour we spend talking about the issues, the stories of the day. Really, we call it a Power Lunch, but it's the worst restaurant in town. The service is terrible here. We hardly ever have our drinks before we are finished. But let's talk a little bit about some of the stories that have come out in the last few weeks. So I did want to touch on the progressive conservative leadership, talk about school boards to start things off. It was, certainly without a lot of study conversation that we saw the provincial government offer up a position for Avis Glaze, Dr. Glaze, to come to the province to examine the education system, to talk about what should be done, the governance model. And she met with groups across the province. She's come up with the plan, the 22-point plan that government accepted, and said that they'll be enacting at least 11 of the conditions. The school board, I think, is mounting a pretty big fight against this. In fact, I've seen on Twitter, the anti or deglaze, they're calling it. So the government's obviously standing its ground. Allie, we'll start with you. School boards are upping the pressure. Your thoughts, where does this go? How does this, how's this going to help the kids?
It's been interesting to see the fallout, and it has been a fallout since Dr. Glaze came forward with her report. I think that there's some things in that report that do have merit, but overall what we've seen is that this has essentially created another wedge issue. And so, on such a complex issue, like how we manage the crisis that is currently our education system, we've lost trust of the most important or one of the most important stakeholders in our province, and that's the teachers. And so you now have had, as a result, teachers come forward in anger and they've removed themselves from the council on classroom conditions. At the end of the day, I think we have to ask ourselves, after what happened last year, after we heard from all of those teachers at Law Amendments, what has been done to help the children in the classrooms? What has been done to support those kids and to make the classrooms better? It's making me as a parent, and as you know, I'm a parent of a child who does have diverse needs, a parent of a child on the autism spectrum. I'm concerned because next up is the Inclusion Commission report. And, so far we have not seen the government be able to bring community together. And to me, that's the first step in addressing the significant challenges we're having in the education system.
Marco, I wanted to hear your perspective on this. When you have a government that is reelected with a majority saying we're going to be tough on labor, we're going to be making drastic changes, we want to improve. No one could convince me that Stephen McNeil hates teachers any more than the Nova Scotia Teachers Union perhaps isn't interested in making things better in the classroom. But when you take a stand, such a position that, this is the path, some say this is leadership, some say this is heavy-handedness, some say there's not a real dialogue, but you got to start somewhere. Where do you see this going with our schools?
I think you framed the question correctly by asking, who's going to help the kids? Because ultimately, the whole point of having an education system is to educate the children. But the collateral question that you're asking is about entrenched interests. And there is a lot of entrenched interests. And those entrenched interests often make it difficult and make it very easy, actually, to lose sight of the fundamental issue, which is we need to figure out how to deliver the best possible education we can to our children.
These entrenched positions on both sides?
But ultimately, somebody was elected to do something about it. And I, for one, I'm glad that someone is doing something about it. I may not agree with everything the government is doing, but something needs to break the impasse. Ali uses the word crisis. There is a crisis. But I think the crisis is in the quality of the education that we're delivering. And we're arguing about how to position the chairs inside the classroom, in a sense. We're arguing a lot about process, and we're arguing a lot about interests that have not a lot to do with the fundamental quality of the education that we deliver in the classrooms.
I think when you look at the school board situation, though, when you're talking about abolishing the school boards, one of the things that stood out for me, and I think I said it to you before, Sheldon, was that when Dr. Glaze talked about, we need to just basically get rid of, amalgamate the school boards, she said, but if in 5 years' time we decide, no, we want to get those back in order, then we can do that. To me, that sounds like, whoa, while there are fundamental problems with the school board system, there are serious bureaucratic issues. And I say this as a parent. I say this as a parent who sits on the school advisory committee. Suggesting that we invest in resources and people power to be able to get rid of an administration system and then only 5 years later perhaps put it back in place sounds to me that she's not entirely convinced that it's the right thing to do. Mm. I mean, all that time, all that investment going into managing that instead of going directly into more supports in the classroom concerns me.
Go ahead, Marco.
Part of the issue, and I sympathize with that position enormously, for the last two generations, education has been hijacked by every fad known to man. And we adopt them, and then we chew them up and find that the flavor is not what we want, and then we spit them out. I think that needs to end, and that's part of the problem here, is that we haven't figured out what is the fundamentals in education that we need to keep. And so we keep putting in and taking out and putting in and taking out, and I think that needs to end. I don't know how exactly that's going to end, but I am guessing that the people who have the most to win beside the children who receive the education are the parents, the guardians of those children. Mm. And so I think there needs to be more involvement at that level, at the parental level. And I'm not suggesting that we don't have bureaucrats. I'm not suggesting that we don't have, a proper administrative function. But parents need to be involved with the education of their children. That, I venture to guess, will change a thing or two.
Yeah, we've got Marco Navarro-Gini from Ames, Allison Garber from Allison Garber Communications in our studio. We're talking about, it is our power lunch. We're talking about the big stories of the day. And Avis Glaze says we need leadership in education. We have ministerial responsibility. Ultimately, isn't it Zach Churchill who should be leading this charge? And is this leadership?
Well, I don't think taking charge of something is necessarily leadership if you're doing the wrong things, or if you're just doing what the majority of the people wants, regardless of whether it's right or wrong. Leadership is doing the right thing, and that is the pickle here.
Hmm. I think when you look at this whole situation and the events of the past year, what it really defines for me is that we've got a huge breakdown in trust. And it's so unfortunate that the people who are at the front lines in this industry, and I'm not saying that, I know you mentioned that everyone has their own agendas, probably not the right word. But to me, leadership is about instilling trust and trust that you have, that you will look at all areas or all facets of a problem, that you will examine all solutions. I think we've lost that. I don't think there is any trust that the government will do that. If you look at pre-primary, I'm going to bring it back up again, there was no consultation. There was consultation after the fact. This decision was made after the announcement about the Council on Classroom Conditions and Inclusive Education Commission. $55 million before any of those recommendations have been made. That's not building trust.
Last word?
Yes. Consultation is a big thing. And it unfortunately has become also a matter of process in which we just talk to the people we want to hear from, and then we say we've consulted. I agree with Ali. There is an enormous breakdown in the bond that there needs to exist in the friendships, in the true sense of the word, that needs to exist for things to move forward.
It's our power lunch. We're going to shift gears a little bit. We talked about leadership. We have a leadership convention, sometime soon, for the Progressive Conservatives in Nova Scotia. Three declared candidates, a fourth to come, I understand, later today, a race of four people. And I'm looking to John DeMont's story in the Herald today. He's talking about divisive politics. And what do you see? I'd like to hear what your thought. Is it going to be personality? Or is it going to be policy that dictates who's the next leader of the official opposition, Allie?
That's a very, very good question. I think we're in a really interesting time right now in politics, and we're seeing people speaking up more and coming together more than we have in recent years. I have mentioned to you before that I am a supporter of the Progressive Conservative Party, and I am a supporter of Tim Houston's. That said, you know, I wouldn't define myself as being heavily partisan. And so I come to this thinking that, you know, the candidates who have come forward to date and the candidates who are likely to be coming forward are all top-notch people. They all offer, various different attributes. But I think it is going to come down to trust, honestly. I think that Nova Scotians aren't feeling part of the process. And what I mean by that is that, you know, policy development and ultimately, you know, party platforms that are pushed forward, membership and Nova Scotians on the ground are feeling very left out of that process. They're not seeing themselves reflected in those things. And so I think it is going to come down to certainly what I've heard, you know, among people in the Progressive Conservative Party, is they want a leader that, you know, is going to have the insights, is going to have the bright ideas, but is also going to go back and gut check those. And you know, to your point, Marco, not just with the people who's going to agree with them, you know, that someone who's able to be able to manage a divisive room, someone who's able to manage a bit of disruption, and then go back and find a solution. And so that it is kind of having, and I hate to use this word, it's so overused, but, you know, a transparent process from identifying an issue and being able to go through the problem solving process. Hmm. I think it is going to come down to character.
Marco.
Political parties are in trouble.
How so?
In general. There is not much of a connection between party and community and communities in the plural. And this is not just in Nova Scotia. This is not just in Canada. There is a crisis of trust, to go back to where Ali was before, connecting people to these entities we call political parties. And the more we make political campaigns about looks and about hair and about preferences for this, that, and the other thing, the more we drive that gulf between people and ideas and between people and power. And so what really needs to happen, and this is there is an opportunity here for this one political party, and every political party also has the same opportunity once they engage these processes, is to connect with the average person. And that will depend whether they actually engage ideas that people are invested in and issues people are invested in. If they don't do that, then it'll be a missed opportunity.
Partisan politics, and we hear about this often, that opposition, the role of opposition is to oppose, to question and challenge. You can't have good legislation without good opposition. But that, with its own inherent bias, brings people saying, well, you're just against the other team, you're just fighting it because it's not your idea. And we hear that so often. So a little different in the leadership convention, you're going to have everyone on the same team, so to speak, even though different camps have been set up within it. So how do you, you know, perhaps get back to grassroots in a system that, you know, essentially is setting you up to oppose the other team?
I think that I remember exactly what he said, but John Hamm years ago said something along the lines of, you know, how can Nova Scotians trust us if we can't, or how can Nova Scotians respect us if we can't respect each other? Mm. And I think that there's a lot to be said about that statement. It has become, you know, it has for many years been, you know, gamesmanship and really about dramatic theater or political theater. And you can see in the last general election, the voter turnout, and that's not just unique to Nova Scotia, that people in this day and age with the advances we have in communication and messaging platforms are just so tired of that. Like they're so tired of the same old style of politics. And they want to be able to have somebody who is a straight shooter who kind of cuts through the key messages and is be able to kind of speak directly to the grassroots.
Okay, I'd say the three of us are probably not considered average for Nova Scotian voters. In some ways, policy hardly ever attracts attention. You know, elections aren't the time to talk about platforms and policy, sometimes they say. But with that in mind, you know, when you're driving an agenda forward, Marco, how do you have those conversations? You know, yesterday I spoke with Cecil Clark, and it was, here it is, back to the same jobs, the economy. We're talking about education. We're talking about healthcare. I mean, those are we always talk about those things.
I'm the epitome of the average guy, Sheldon. I don't know what you're talking about. In our system, it is often said, and this goes back quite a while, that governments are as good as the opposition. And the job of an opposition isn't just to oppose. The job of an opposition is to propose, and that's where we have forgotten. When you have governments, opposing parties just at the other end just saying no, that just makes things stale, and we need to demand that oppositions be better. Hmm. Now, on education, on healthcare, and all these things, people actually care about these things. What they're not hearing is actual solutions that would make a difference in their lives. We keep talking about spending more money on education. We talk about spending more money on healthcare, and we keep spending more money on these things, and yet there are no results or no measurable results. Hmm. This is a problem. So we need to figure out what ideas and what actual policies are going to make a change for the better. And that's what's going to engage people.
When it goes back to the PC leadership, one of the things that really made me notice Tim Houston is that he said, you know, you're never going to be able to solve any problems unless you're being honest about, or you're never going to find a solution unless you're being honest about the problem. And I think about a situation like Carly Sutherland's, and I'm sure many of your listeners know about Carly, whose autistic son was in the IWK and was in serious crisis, and it didn't seem like help was anywhere. Mm. And what a lot of people noticed, Sheldon, wasn't about the policies around that. It was about who stood up and came forward and acknowledged the problem, who had the courage to be able to stand up for Carly, whether you're government or opposition, and say this is a problem. This is not right, and we can do better. And I think that, to the average voter, matters more than your talking points about policy. It's, do you have the character to step up and actually admit when something's wrong and have the courage to be able to go forward and fix it?
I agree that character is key, but not in that way. We shouldn't run policy on the basis of exceptions. Those things should be taken care of by the people who are implementing policy. They should have some level of compassion. They should have the skills to be able to deal with that. And we don't have to involve our main leaders in a community like ours to have to solve every little thing.
One thing I'll say, though, Carly Sutherland's situation is not an exception. That there, Carly Sutherland's situation is incredibly common within the autistic community. Carly Sutherland just blew open those doors.
We're going to take a break, and I'll advise you, if you are having lunch with friends today, don't talk politics. We'll do that here, because this is what this platform's all about. It's all good. Marco Navarro-Gini and Allison Garber, more of this conversation coming up in just a few seconds. All right, into the final few moments of Power Lunch. Still waiting for drinks. I don't know. I'm not leaving a tip. We've got our two guests in studio, Marco Navarro-Gini from Ames, Allison Garber from Allison Garber Communications. Time to embrace the 10,000-mile diet. I know, Marco, you were talking a little bit about this. In fact, someone who was involved with this report said, you know, let's get rid of this whole idea that local is the only way to go in this global environment. So what's the rationale there?
The greatest thing that has happened to transportation and food in particular is the shipping container. It has made food affordable, and you know, you can get exotic things from here to the other end of the world and vice versa. And if you look at, for example, the things that we export the most, or the things that almost constitute the livelihood of this province, blueberries, lobster, apples, and so many agricultural products, in a continuously shrinking population, we need to find markets for them. And so we export them. So now apply that to the opposite end, at the other end where people say, no, we're only going to consume local stuff. We don't want Nova Scotia lobster. We don't want blueberries. We don't want apples because, you know, we have our own whatever it is there. It the whole system breaks down.
But it's not exclusive, and it can be both. Can't you find a blend? I mean, that's, Ali, you're kind of looking like that's where you're thinking.
Yeah, and also that I do not have enough expertise to weigh in. Yeah, no, it's certainly where I would stand also, you know, I'm very interested in the shipping of, you know, wines from other country, for example. Highly endorse that concept.
Okay. Cheers to that.
Yeah, cheers.
So in some ways, it's not saying we need to get rid of the local movement as much as just recognize that sometimes it's to our detriment if we only think that way.
Yes. Okay. And that is indeed the issue, right? We don't want to just consume local stuff because, you know, where are we going to get tomatoes in the middle of February, if that's the case, or oranges or what have you? Where are we going to get single malt, Shel?
Hey, you're where? On my path now. That and I have a banana every day. I don't have single malt every day, but I do have bananas, and they don't grow in the valley. All right, just a few seconds left, and it is our power lunch, and sometimes we'll throw something in that's a little bit out there. This popped up in my Facebook feed. Shoot and Dinner. This is a local gun range, an outfitter. They're having a Valentine's Day special, so you can have a one-hour shoot with ammunition. Your choice of a gun, a rental gun, you get eye and ear protection. And then you also get a meal for two, whatever you want, up at Curly Portables. So my question is, Allie, best Valentine's gift ever or best Valentine's gift never?
My question is, who are you following on Facebook? This came up on your feed. Yeah, no, I probably wouldn't. It's not my thing. Yeah, anything kind of to do with bullets on you know, the most romantic day of the year probably doesn't coincide in my world. I don't know, Marco, or what are you feeling?
I've always balked on this idea that I have to be romantic on that particular day.
Well, that
day.
Too, yeah.
So
you're romantic every day. I can just.
You know, I am. Yeah. So there's that. And the other thing is, variety is the spice of life. And you know, if some people get their kicks shooting guns and, you know, being together, then that's great. This is what markets are all about. You know, present as much possibilities to people as one can. And if people are willing to pay for that, and then, you know, go out for dinner, and why not? I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm going to try it. In fact, I'm not saying that I'm going to try it. But there is a market, perhaps, for that sort of thing, and why not?
It's like a politician in training over here.
No,
very sound.
This is Marco is well versed in many stories, and we very much appreciate his perspective on all of them. Marco Navarro-Gini, thanks for coming in and doing this.
Thank you.
I know you were a little bit nervous about what was going to take place. You any less nervous, or?
Ali is extremely generous, and so are you. So okay. I'm perfectly content.
So we'll do this again someday.
I hope so.
All right, Allison Garber, Ali Garber Communications. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, power lunch is over. Still no food. We'll be back with a conversation with Sherry Lecker, Adsum House. This is Tuesday. More on that coming up.